This is Frank Sedapani with the CBS World News Roundup.
Hide, 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 hide.
Hide, hide, hide,
hide.
The band leader, singer, and dancer Cab Calloway died last night at a Delaware nursing home 5 months after suffering a stroke. He was 86. In a career that spanned more than 60 years, the signature song he was always identified with was Minnie the Moocher.
Folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a red-hot hoochie.
Calloway performed in the jazz joints of Chicago, on Broadway, in Harlem's Cotton Club, and the movies. Wherever he played, he was always one thing that made his work satisfying.
When I see my audience show that they're happy.
Calloway discovered Dizzy Gillespie and promoted the careers of Pearl Bailey and Lena Horne. In a 1988 CBS News interview, he spoke about being mistaken for other prominent black performers.
I've been called Duke Ellington, they call me Count Basie, they call me Lionel Hampton, call me everybody they think, you see, because we all look alike to him.
Those who enjoyed his music and stage presence knew there was no one quite like Cab Calloway. Senator Jesse Helms, in line to be the next chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, has fired the first shot in what could be a barrage of salvos aimed at President Clinton, telling CNN's Evans and Novak he doesn't think the president is up to the job of commander-in-chief.
No, I do not. And neither do the people in armed forces.
But Helms refused to name names.
Oh, there's just about every military man who writes to me. We got a pile of military installations in North Carolina.
These active duty officers, general-grade officers?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us who they are?
No.
At a political dinner in Honolulu last night, the president's message was reconciliation.
What has always made us great is not moaning or being negative or being divisive or running down people who are different from we are, from what we are. What's always made us great is coming together, facing our problems, joining together, and figuring out some practical, hard-headed way to solve problems so that our children would be better off than we are.
Whether the president can get his wish will depend on his relationship with the Republican congressional leadership that's meeting this weekend to get organized. Rob Armstrong has that.
House Republicans have pledged to act on the items in their contract with America in the first 100 days of the new Congress, which means votes on such issues as welfare reform, a balanced budget amendment, and prayer in the public schools. House Democrats, however, say the GOP may be trying to do too much too quickly. House Democratic Whip David Bonnier.
I think trying to get this done in 100 days is reaching, and I think it exposes the extreme position of the Republican conference.
Even if everything races through the House, it will not speed through the Senate. Incoming Senate Majority Leader Bob Dole.
I know they're going to push some things very quickly, which they can do in the House. We just normally go at a slower pace. We don't have a rules committee. We can't have 2 hours of debate and then vote.
While some elements of the House agenda, such as a line item veto, will likely be approved quickly and signed by the president, other issues could be bottled up indefinitely in the Senate or face a presidential veto. Rob Armstrong, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
In California, Democratic incumbent Dianne Feinstein has claimed re-election in a tight Senate race to the wire and beyond with Republican Mike Huffington.
In declaring victory, I do so not with boasts and exhilaration, but with a somber commitment to the people of this great state.
Huffington has refused to concede until he's satisfied that all the votes have been counted and all were legally valid. Almost 2 weeks after they went to the polls, Alaskans finally know the name of their next governor. The final count gives the election to Democrat Tony Knowles by a margin of 528 votes over Republican Jim Campbell. What meteorologists call the most bizarre storm in more than 20 years is drifting south over the Atlantic, where forecasters hope it will die. While it was still a hurricane, what's once again Tropical Storm Gordon dropped a destructive calling card on North Carolina's Outer Banks. Residents can see the damage everywhere.
I was standing here, and there was four houses in front of me, and now there's nothing left but a big pile of lumber and broken up furniture. And you really feel sorry for the people.
The storm barely missed Jacksonville as it doubled back to Florida, where it had already killed six people and caused an estimated $200 million in crop damage. Earlier, the storm killed hundreds of people in Haiti. In Miami, Jim Kavner's relief group Food for the Poor is shipping tons of rice and other food supplies to feed Haitians left homeless by Gordon.
We got an urgent call from our manager asking for immediate help, so we wired her money to buy food locally, and we're anxious to get this food down to her so she can also use it for some of the storm victims.
Near blizzard conditions are blamed for at least 4 deaths in North Dakota. Parts of Nevada will have to dig out from under 2 feet of fresh snow. In Snowbird, Utah, the snow is a blessing for Chris Foltz, who runs a ski resort.
It's great. There's snowbanks as tall as I am, which is about 5 feet, 6 inches, and it's all white.
In Butte, Montana, it was all cold. The temperature fell to 14 below. A bus bound for the former black homeland of Transkei crashed about 300 miles from Durban, killing 58 people. It was South Africa's second major fatal bus accident this month. A day after Palestinian police killed a dozen protesters in Gaza Strip street battles, the deadly ferment continues in the Middle East. Israeli troops shot and killed at least 3 Palestinians in new flare-ups in Gaza and the West Bank. Robert Berger has the latest.
Muslim fundamentalists took to the streets of the West Bank in angry demonstrations during a general strike to protest the killings. Hundreds of demonstrators chanted slogans against PLO leader Yasser Arafat, burned tires, and threw stones at Israeli soldiers. The soldiers responded with tear gas and rubber bullets. In an attempt to defuse the tension and possible civil war between the PLO and the fundamentalists, representatives from both sides held all-night negotiations and agreed on a ceasefire. Robert Berger for CBS News, Jerusalem.
In Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, rioters burned Prime Minister Rabin and Yasser Arafat in effigy. The UN Security Council, incensed by the napalming of the Bosnian Muslim enclave at Bihać, is expected to vote today to let NATO warplanes bomb Serbian rebel airfields in Croatia. British Ambassador David Hannay says another such bombing would be a suicide wish.
We'll make it clear that any action of this sort will be now in future within the ambit of the airstrike provisions.
According to published reports, a transcript of the Los Angeles police interrogation of O.J. Simpson a few hours after he allegedly killed his ex-wife Nicole and Ron Golden quotes him as saying, "I know I'm the number one target." He also reportedly claimed he was the victim of physical abuse by his wife. Not only are the Postal Service and its unions at odds over the terms of a new contract, they can't even agree on where the negotiations stand ahead of a midnight deadline. The agency is optimistic, but the head of the letter carriers union says he's discouraged and totally outraged by a proposed wage freeze and the elimination of cost of living adjustments. By law, postal workers are forbidden from striking. The baseball strike talks are expected to resume today outside Washington. It's 10 past.